Hi everybody, welcome back to Poly 203. I'm sorry about such a long day. I gave my first lecture to you this morning. I talked to a few of you on Zoom during my office hours today, and I have another lecture for you ready. So let me describe that. I'm gonna switch over to my slides and I'll be right back with you. Hi everybody, thanks for joining me on this lecture for Poly 203. This is my second lecture of the day. Actually, I gave another one earlier this morning, and this will be the last one for this week. This lecture is going to focus particularly on the issue of who deserves which punishment for a different crime. And of course, in this context, we're looking at first degree homicides and trying to figure out who deserves a death sentence, if anybody does, and who deserves not to get death, but to get a lesser sentence such as life in prison. But more than only that question, which was treated by the Supreme Court in the Magotha versus California decision in 1971, I want to raise the stakes of this issue to just talk about the fairness of the criminal justice punishment system in general, because inherently legislators have to decide that a certain crime is equivalent to another crime, to put all the crimes and felonies into certain classes or categories, and then to suggest that each class should correspond to a certain range of punishment. So with the case of first degree homicide, what we're interested in and what we've talked about all semester is really the issue of whether a certain crime deserves death and whether the most deserving people are getting the death sentence and other people are getting a lesser sentence. But there's a broader question here, which is also really troubling, because there's a lot of ways that one can commit homicide. And some of them don't get that much punishment at all. So I'm going to talk about that. So I'm going to switch over to my slide so that you can follow them one at a time. Thanks. Okay, so today we're going to talk about two things. The different kinds of homicide that we have here in North Carolina, which is similar to other states, but I'm going to use this as an example. And then we're going to talk about the Magotha versus California decision. At the end of this lecture today, I'm going to give you an example, which is really in the form of a quiz, but it's not really a quiz in the sense that there's no wrong answers. But I'm going to give you 10 hypothetical scenarios and ask you to rate them from low to high on the degree to which they are particularly heinous or deserving of the death penalty. There's no right answers to those questions, but what we want to do is see if 400 people apply the same rules, which are quite vague. You just decide how heinous do you think this is, which one is more heinous than the other. If 400 people do that, how much agreement will there be across those rankings? If there's not very much agreement, then it's hard to say that the system is very reliable. So that's what we're going to talk about right now. You all know Serena Williams, or at least you should know Serena Williams, greatest female tennis player of all time. And one of the greatest athletes of our time. I've given you a clip there of her losing 1-6, 0-6 to a tennis player that most of you have never heard of and probably never will hear of. And it's remarkable. And I remember when this happened, I said, wait a minute, Serena Williams does not lose 1-6, 0-6 to anybody. So what happened? And it turns out that just moments before she walked on the court, she found out that the killer of her half-sister, Yatunda, had been granted parole and was released from prison. And he had served just 12 years for the crime of killing Serena Williams' half-sister. So the background story to that is that Yatunda was shot and killed in a drive-by shooting back in 2003 in Los Angeles. The killer, it was some kind of gangland thing or drug-related drive-by shooting. And they had intended to kill the driver of the car, but they missed, and they shot Yatunda, who was seated in the passenger seat, in the front seat of the car. Because they hadn't shot her on purpose, it wasn't ruled a first-degree homicide. And a person was convicted, and they served 12 years in prison and were released in March 2018, just before Serena lost that match. She found out, apparently, on Instagram that this person had been released from prison. So naturally, she was quite upset. But it raises the question, I mean, this raises a lot of questions, but one is, if you kill Serena Williams' sister, don't you deserve more than 12 years in prison? Second, if you shoot and kill the person you intend to shoot, that's first degree murder. But if you're a bad shot and you shoot and kill someone you didn't mean to shoot, who was totally innocent, not even the intended target of your crime, should that make you be less culpable, or should it make you be more culpable? The law says it makes you less culpable and the punishment is lesser. So this is just an example to get you thinking about the difficulty of all these kinds of equivalencies, or the degree of punishment that we should have for different kinds of crime, and in particular homicide. So anyway, that's just a story about Serena Williams. I encourage you to Google it, read up on it. It's disturbing and revealing of a lot of contradictions and difficulties in this general area. Okay, so the question in general is, what crimes deserve what punishment? Excuse me. In Magotha, in 1971, the Supreme Court was confronted with this question. They said, which crimes merit the death penalty and which crimes do not? And they wrote down, they ruled that we cannot write down on paper those conditions. It's impossible for us to specify exactly the bright line, or any kind of bright line, between crimes that deserve death and crimes that don't. So we're going to talk about that in some detail today. But before we do, I'm going to turn to the North Carolina general statutes as a guide to a kind of a generic version of this problem, beyond only as it relates to the death penalty, but in general. So here I've given you some links to some websites that give the North Carolina laws. Let me show you some of these one at a time. The North Carolina General Statutes, you can see at this official looking website. This is kind of an interesting thing for a person to review because, I mean, it's enormous, first of all, okay? Secondly, as a citizen, remember, anyone who breaks a law cannot use ignorance of the law as an excuse. So there's a way in which you're assumed to be aware of all these chapters in the criminal code. And that's quite scary, because I know for a fact that you're not aware of it. So let's look at chapter 14 in the criminal code, which is the criminal law. I'll display it in HTML. And here we go. This thing is a monster. If you go through this website, you can see that it goes on pretty much forever. Okay. So I would like to have you just kind of browse through that at your leisure. Look in particular at section 14, which is the criminal code, and section 14-17, which is homicides in particular. So let me show you that very quickly. If we scroll down to section 2, 7, section 14, Section 17, I'm sorry. I'm going to search for the homicide section. Article 6, Section 17, murder in the first degree. So this is the definition of murder in the first degree. Murder as manslaughter, death by distribution of cocaine or methamphetamines. The law describes each kind of homicide. Okay. So I'm not going to read it for you, but I would encourage you to just go through that section and read it, get familiar with it. There's all kinds of interesting things in there. I've also put up on the website this list of all the felonies, which comes from the North Carolina, from the department, or from the North Carolina system of the court system. And I put it on the website at this site, North Carolina Felonies by Class, and similarly North Carolina Punishments by Class. So for example, Class A felonies have a certain punishment. That punishment is death or life without parole. Class B felonies have different penalties, and so let's look at those very briefly. This document, which is the North Carolina Felonies by Class, available on the class website, shows, for example, that there's four crimes that fall into Class A. Class A felonies are the most severe felonies. Murder in the first degree. Murder in the first degree with a child who dies as a result of injuries. Murder of an unborn child or unlawful use of a nuclear weapon. Okay, so these are the only crimes in North Carolina that are of the highest class. There's B1 felonies, which are also very severe. B2 felonies, C felonies, so being an armed habitual felon, causing death by distribution of certain controlled substances, which is drugs, second degree forcible rape, various things in Class C. Class C includes a lot of different things, including embezzlement by officers of railroad companies. Okay, that goes on for quite a while through Class C. Class D, operating a continuing criminal enterprise. Voluntary manslaughter, Class D. Discharging certain barreled weapons or a firearm into an occupied dwelling. That's a Class D felony. And the felony list goes on and on and on and on and on. It's 38 pages long, so that you can see how these things are all listed. And each of them corresponds to each felony corresponds to a particular felony class. So trafficking in marijuana between 10 but less than 50 pounds is a Class H felony. So lesser amounts of marijuana trafficking would be a lower felony, and higher amounts would be a higher level of felony. And then if we go to this felony punishment chart, you can see that a Class A felony, no matter along these columns here, are the prior record of the individual who's being sentenced. So if you have zero prior points and you commit a Class A felony, it really doesn't matter how many prior points you have. If it's a Class A felony, the only punishments are either death or life without parole. If you're under the age of 18, the only punishment is life without parole. Then when we get into the other felonies other than Class A, for every group of people based on the number of prior points from low to high, we see three ranges of possible punishments, and these punishments are listed in months. There's the presumptive range, which is what 90% of people will receive, somewhere in that range. the mitigated range, which might be if the judge, for whatever reason, declares that you have very strong evidence about factors that make you less culpable, he can give you a lower punishment, but still it's not that low. And he can give you an aggravated, he or she, the judge can give you an aggravated punishment in certain circumstances. But if you look just at the people with no prior points, you can see that a class A felony is going to get life without parole or death. A class B felony is going to get up to 20 years in prison, 240 months. That's 20 years in prison. 10 years in prison, perhaps 10 to 15 if it's a B2. Maybe 6 years in prison for a C level felony. And on to where it's a H level felony, maybe just 5 months in prison, and so on. Okay. So what I want you to get out of this is that, first of all, there's a lot of felonies, that each felony corresponds then to a particular class, and each class corresponds to a particular punishment. Okay. So if we look at the punishments for different kinds of homicide on this chart, you can see that first-degree murder is an A-level offense, and its minimum punishment is life without parole. So in the chart, I've given you the minimum for the person with no prior points, measured in months, or in the last column, measured in years. Second-degree murder may, depending on the state of mind of the individual who committed the murder, maybe a B1 or a B2 felony. And depending on that, it might get you 16 years in prison or 10 years in prison. So taking a plea deal from first degree to second degree could save you a lot of time in prison. And if it's your first offense, you have no prior points, you could walk out of prison after just 10 years for a B2 felony. Felony and misdemeanor death by vehicle, so killing somebody by driving a car, for example, drunk driving, could potentially be as bad as a B2 felony, which could get you 10 years in prison. But there are other things. Killing somebody by selling them drugs could get you, is a C-level felony, and that would get you 4 years in prison. Voluntary manslaughter, a D-level felony, would get you 4 years in prison. Involuntary manslaughter gets you 1 year, 13 months in prison, if you have no prior points. So my point here is that there's a lot of range, a lot of variability in the possible punishments for different crimes. But in all these crimes, we see that somebody died, or in almost all of them. Assault with the intent to kill does not involve a killing, but it certainly involves the attempt to kill one. So what I'd like you to spend a little bit of time on is to read through that list of felonies, the homicide felonies and the other felonies. Obviously, you don't need to memorize it, but pay attention to it. It's really interesting. A thought-provoking exercise. What are the most questionable equivalencies that you see in this list of felonies? Because each felony corresponds to a particular class. What would you do if you were in charge? How would you vote on it if you were a state legislator? Because these general statutes come from votes by our legislature. They accumulate over time, but every once in a while there's a major revision of them. And so state legislators are required to try to figure out these moral equivalencies, and I think it's a much more difficult job than people recognize. So if you think that every one of these felony classes corresponds then to a punishment, therefore every crime that's correlated to that same class is considered by the state to be equally serious. So read that carefully and review it for yourself. The other thing I'd like you to keep in mind is that the classification of punishments often depends on an assumption about the state of mind of the killer, or the state of mind of the perpetrator, the offender. And that's just a difficult thing for us to assess with certainty, but it's required in so many cases. Just as an example, let's look at the Class E felonies. Let me go back to that list. The Class E felonies include a wide range of crimes. Habitual breaking and entering, sexual activity by a substitute parent or custodian, maliciously throwing corrosive acid on somebody, patient abuse and neglect, culpably negligent conduct proximately causes death. So this would be someone in a hospital or a nursing home. Culpably negligent conduct, okay? Assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, discharging a barreled weapon into occupied property, assault with a firearm on a law enforcement officer, okay? A Class E felony will get you about 2 years in prison, or up to 5 years if you have lots of prior points and the judge finds the crime to be aggravated. So you can look through the general statutes and search for the phrase Class E, or you can look at the chart that I just showed you. The law is basically saying that all those crimes are the same, or they're equally culpable. Okay, they're equally, they merit the same punishment, and I think that's worth something. That's worth you spending some time to decide if you agree. Now, I just want you to think back, or to step back and think about this. Just considering homicides, the penalties range from no penalty at all if the law determines that that it was a self-defense case, which is not a crime, to 1 year in prison for involuntary manslaughter, and to higher levels of punishment depending on the distinctions we make about what type of homicide it was, and in particular, the intentions of the killer, okay? I didn't mean to do it, it was a mistake. That's involuntary manslaughter, okay? And you'll get a very light punishment compared to if the district attorney and the jury and the judge agree that you did it on purpose. It's a different kind of thing. Did you do it in the heat of passion, or did you do it with premeditation? So the other thing that you might do, or that I would like you to do, is to compare the homicide cases to the other kinds of crimes that did not result in death that are in the same class, and to question whether that's something that is as it should be, okay? I'm not criticizing the state of North Carolina here. I'm just trying to point out that these are very difficult equivalencies. The other thing I want you to think about with regards to this is the power that it gives to all the district attorneys. The district attorney decides which crime to charge you with. And each of those crimes correlates with the presumptive punishment based on the class of crime. They also, the district attorneys, are empowered with the ability to make a plea bargain. And so they could charge you with first degree homicide, but accept a plea for second degree homicide, or even non-negligent manslaughter, which would come with much, much lower levels of punishment. So that's really how plea bargains work. And you can see the incredible amount of power given to the district attorney through these distinctions, because each decision to charge with a certain level of crime comes with it a presumptive punishment, and those punishments differ dramatically depending on the exact class of crime that you were charged with. Okay, so that's an exercise that I would like you to pay some attention to, and now I want to focus on the Magotha question, which goes back strictly to the death penalty issue. But I think these other considerations of equivalencies and what should be the punishment for which crime give us a good background to think about. I would like you to review the material around page 17 of Deadly Justice at some point. And also, if you want to, you can read the Magotha decision. And let me just show you where to find it. Go to my page, go to books, Deadly Justice, and legal citations and cases, and you'll find Magotha. And you can read the case and the decision. Okay? So please take some time, spend some time looking at that. But the basic idea is that Mr. Magotha was sentenced to death, and he complained that the jurors in his case assigned him to death, to the punishment of death, but they had no clear rules to follow. Isn't that inherently capricious, was the question that Mr. Magotha posed. Shouldn't there be clear rules about which defendants deserve to get death and which ones do not? And this idea is sometimes referred to as the unguided discretion of the sentencer. Shouldn't there be some guidance to the discretion that the jury or the judge, whoever sentences the person to death or chooses not to sentence, shouldn't there be some kind of discretion? So this is the idea of unguided discretion. And the United States Supreme Court responded to Mr. Magotha saying, no, we don't have to write it down. Juries can exercise mercy based on so many factors that we can't expect any clarity. It's beyond human capacity to specify which crimes deserve the death penalty and which ones don't. One of you asked me by email, what is it that has surprised me the most in my studies of the death penalty, and really understanding the implications of the Magotha decision might be that thing. There's a few, but this is definitely in my top five of the things that have surprised me the most. To think that we can have a death penalty without any clear guidance about which crimes deserve the death penalty and which ones don't, but we leave it up to the whims and fancies of the sentencers without any clear guidance. And I don't think that the sentencers, usually juries, just make stuff up. But I also think that if we're going to have a death penalty, we should be able to write down on a piece of paper the crimes that merit it, and then we shouldn't leave it to chance. Okay, but the United States Supreme Court in 1971 clearly stated that, yeah, we're going to leave it, that exercise of mercy cannot be specified through any kind of mathematical formula or strict rules. There'll always be exceptions, is what they basically said. So I'm going to give you this exercise, and that'll be the end of my lecture. The exercise comes from a colleague who's a professor at the Harvard Law School, so definitely comes with a high degree of pedigree. And on the next slides are 10 little vignettes, or very short little hypothetical cases, all of which involves a death that in some states might be eligible for the death penalty. In most states they would, most death states, and certainly in North Carolina, these crimes would potentially be eligible for the death penalty. And the exercise is to rank them in order of which ones deserve it the most. So you can take a few minutes to complete this. The quiz is available on Sakai. You can study these quiz questions as long as you like, and then come to your own conclusion about which ones are worse than the others and try to put them in order from 1 to 10. Which one deserves death? That would be number 1. Okay, so here's the scenarios. First one, a middle-aged woman with no substantial criminal record completely neglects a 3-year-old child who is placed with her for foster care, for which the foster mother receives a stipend sufficient to care for the child. The foster mother spends the stipend on her opioid addiction rather than the child, and the child slowly starves to death over a period of months. be an alcoholic armed robber. A 30-year-old alcoholic with a substantial record of theft offenses commits an armed robbery of a liquor store. When the store clerk reaches for the alarm button, the defendant shoots him once in the chest, killing him. Abused wife. A woman who has been repeatedly physically abused by her husband, that is, badly beaten up, but not to the point of being in danger of death, hires a hitman who kills her husband. The defendant to be sentenced is the wife. Sex offender rape in desert. A repeat sex offender, a 25-year-old of low intelligence, though not intellectually disabled, who was himself sexually abused as a child, kidnaps a college-age woman, drives her into the desert, and then rapes her, beats her, and leaves her there. She dies of exposure to the elements when she can't find her way out of the desert before nightfall. Suicide bomber accomplice. A suicide bomber detonates a bomb in a public place, killing 5 and injuring 12. Although the bomber himself is killed in the attack, the members of the radicalized religious cell who helped to plan the attack and make the bomb are arrested. They are 2 men in their late 20s and 1 19-year-old who has no prior record of adult or juvenile offenses. The defendant to be sentenced is the 19-year-old. Father killer. A middle-aged man with no criminal record kills his elderly father, who is in a permanent vegetative state, in order to inherit his father's estate. Intentional killing of fetus. A man beats up his pregnant ex-girlfriend with the express intent of killing her unborn child by another man, with whom she is 8 months pregnant. The mother lives, but the fetus dies. Note, this prosecution takes place in a state that designates the intentional killing of a fetus without the mother's consent as first-degree murder. Young car thief kills police officer. An 18-year-old car thief is driving a stolen car when he is stopped by the police. When the officer approaches the driver's side window, the defendant shoots him. The defendant has a juvenile record of theft, assault, and weapons possession. Drug addict arson. A drug addict burns down the triple-decker home that he inherited from his parents for the fire insurance. 4 members of the family that rented the apartment on the 3rd floor die in the fire. The defendant knew that the rental unit was occupied, but it's not clear whether he knew that the renters were home at the time of the arson. Prison race riot. A large-scale fight breaks out between warring racial groups in prison, during which a white supremacist gang member kills a Hispanic gang member. The defendant was serving time for armed robbery at the time of the riot. Okay, that's the Magotha quiz. It's not really a quiz. It's available on the Class Sakai site, but I want to mention it's kind of like a quiz in that you have to do it. Okay, so do it. Another similarity to a quiz is this: you have to do it by the end of the day Friday. And I'll compile the results of what you say about which of these crimes are worse than the others, and I'll report back to you with the collective results, and you'll see how hard it is to get a consensus about which crimes are more serious than others. And that's really the point of all this exercise today, is to just understand intuitively and to internalize the difficulty of applying rigid rules, but we have to do something to figure out which crimes deserve which punishments. That's a problem in the context of the death penalty, but I think it's a problem throughout the criminal justice system. We all want people convicted of similar crimes to get similar punishments. Otherwise, it's not fair. But actually, it's very difficult to ensure a system that does that. Okay, that's all I have for you this week. I hope that you stay safe and healthy, that your families are in good shape, and as always, I'm happy to see your emails anytime. Thanks so much. I'll talk to you soon.